Tech is a bi-weekly podcast exploring the intersections of technology and ministry. It is part of the podcast network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Our show today is hosted by Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Welcome back to Wells Tech, everybody. This is episode 757, recording on August 22nd, 2025. My name is Martin Spriggs, and this is a show about technology and ministry and where those two intersect. Joining me as usual this morning is Sally Draper. Hello, Sally.
Hi, Martin. Happy to be joining you as we see these days of summer, you know, coming close
so
to an
fast end. Yeah.
How does that happen so
quickly? I don't mind
so
fall, but I don't like what happens after fall.
Yeah. We'll be here
anyway,
soon.
Yeah. This has been quite the summer for a lot of different reasons. We had Synod Convention, so I've had two trips out to Minnesota this year. Going to be headed out close to Minnesota for another wedding in September. So lots of family events, lots of weather events. We're going to talk a little bit about that in one of my picks here. A lot of that wet stuff coming down. How have you been keeping busy this summer?
Oh, there's never a lack of things to do. One thing we've done at our church is launch home Bible studies.
We did too. Well, almost. We're just starting.
Well, we did our premiere sessions this summer, and it was neat because there wasn't any specific schedule. The pastors would put out a set of Bible study questions and ideas around the sermon for the week, and we chose to meet every other week kind of throughout the summer, and we hosted a group in our home. It ended up being a group of about 12 to 15, depending on who could come. So it wasn't quite small, but it was super neat to get to know some members that we didn't know very well, and just to kind of gather together in a relaxed setting and share our mutual faith and our questions and ideas around the studies that were available to us. So I would call it a big success. It was a lot of fun. We have one more week. That'll be next Wednesday night that we meet for the last time with our group for this summer. And I'm guessing they'll do it again. But kind of that mutual prayer request stuff at the end just really sets your heart on fire for the needs of God's people, and it's a neat experience.
It is, this is the third one I've been involved with organizing, and it's always a lot of work, but always worth it. So we're starting with five groups, and we're gonna do every other week here in the fall, so mid September to mid November. See how it goes. They've had this at this church before. What do you call your group?
We don't really have
for the program
a name beyond small group Bible study at this point. What do you call yours?
Christ Family Circles.
Oh, I like it.
Yeah.
Seems like at our last church, it was called Connect Groups. But I don't think we have a specific name here yet, at least. And also, we don't really have a specific format. And as we met as host together in preparation for it, our pastor said, you know, we're still trying to figure that out, you know, what format it'll take, and we're not going to be bound by anything. I've talked to some pastors where they really encourage them to spend, you know, 30 minutes in fellowship before you start the Bible study and really focus on prayer requests and things just to help people, you know, gather
build those
around
relationships.
Those relationships and stuff and fellowship. And so we did more of like, our study was about an hour and a half each week, and really with an introductory question to kind of ice break. We'd spend a little time on that, and then maybe 45 minutes of the more in-depth Bible study, wrapping up with prayer request. And then we had kind of about 30 minutes left at the end for fellowship time. So we traded off on bringing snacks and drinks and things. And we'd share. One week we had root beer floats and, you know, just fun stuff and a good time to relax and visit with each other.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We'll have to compare notes. Yeah. I'm looking forward to ours starting here. We're doing ours on Sunday night.
So. Oh, and so everybody's doing it on Sunday nights?
Nope.
Oh,
everybody
okay.
picks. So there's a couple actually on Saturday morning,
That's
which is
good.
Interesting. A couple on Sunday night and a Monday night, I think, for our five groups. So with schedules and, it used to be, now I started doing one of these a long time ago, probably in the 80s, early 90s. And there wasn't as much going on for family, so they could, you know, pick a night, and pretty much you could do that. It's tough to find a night, especially I would think, especially in the summer, to that people are not gone, or baseball, or you know, who knows what's available. So,
yeah, we didn't have any Saturday morning ones, and that might be a good thing. But we kind of just let the host pick the night. Or the time frame
that's
that they,
doing.
And even the frequency, you know, like I said, some people did it only three or four times. We did it every other week during the summer. So it was maybe eight or nine times that we gathered.
Cool. Yeah. We're doing that sticky church kind of concept too, where we're basing it on the sermon or the readings.
Like that.
Common bond. All right. Well, we should probably talk a little bit about tech and ministry, although we could probably talk about small group tech and ministry, too. There's a little bit there, too. We are finishing up our summer series. We'll call it our summer finale. We've been kind of just taking little articles, little tips and tricks, little nuggets throughout the summer, and spending a show talking about them. Little things that, you know, maybe aren't worthy of a full-blown show, although they have kind of turned into that. But just little topics that are helpful as you think about technology and ministry. So there's a lot of good content out there, and there's no shortage of things that we had to choose from. And we're going to kind of finish with a little bit of a heavy hitter, because we've actually dedicated full shows to this and had guests and such as well. But that's security, or privacy, / how to protect the data and the people that you have in your organization. That's a big, wide topic, but we found a couple of great resources that'll help skinny that down and help somebody focus on, you know, cybersecurity in general for your church. So, Sally, where do you want to start?
Well, actually, I think I might have been the one that suggested this, and there were a couple of reasons for that. One was there was a recent discussion from our Wells Tech Google group, and my friend Michael Vlieger asked the question, I'm looking for training for my school faculty, basically. So he's the technology coordinator at Risen Savior Lutheran School here in Mankato, and just want to brush them up on things like phishing scams and password best practices and safe browsing, all those kind of things. And got some great feedback. I'll share a link in the show notes to that discussion thread. People recommended different online companies, basically, and also government entities that have a lot of cybersecurity type training and information available, some of it for free, some of it for pay. One that struck or came out in my mind was Know Before, because that's what we use at the Synod level, and just have been super impressed with the materials that they've presented that I've been encouraged strongly to participate in at the Synod level. So we often get training, you know, pushed out to us, please complete this training by X date out in the future or whatever. So I've seen their materials. I think they're really well done, but there are others that were mentioned, including InfoSec and CyberNut as being two that are specific, especially CyberNut to schools. So that might be a possibility. But it came at me from a couple of other directions as well. One of them I wasn't really suspecting at all. And that was that our pastor opened up his sermon, his introduction to his sermon recently, talking about identity theft. And the reason was what kind of led him to introduce that way was because he was preaching on Jacob and Esau and the stealing of Esau's birthright and blessing from Isaac and all of those things that happened there in mid-Genesis when Jacob kind of took things into his own hands. And
identity theft has been around a long time.
It has. And sinful people have sinful motives sometimes, or maybe even what they think are good motives. I don't know. But yeah, it's been around for a while. And Pastor Nelson shared some really good examples, practical examples, including the fact that our church secretary had gotten a couple of emails from him that very week that said, "Hey, I seem to have misplaced our electronic directory. Can you send me that file?" And being a little bit questioning on that request, she reached out to Pastor Nelson in person and said, "This seems like an odd request." And he's like, "Yeah, you're right. I did not send that email." And so just some really practical examples that it's happening, you know, daily. And then finally, we have a really good article to share from our friends at Concordia Technology Solutions. So all of this kind of background information on cybersecurity basics for churches, where they kind of talk through some of the things that you need to be aware of and what kind of, you know, methods hackers are, those people that are trying to get your information are using, and why it even matters. I think one point that they made right off the bat is the single most hackable piece of any computer system, unfortunately, is the people. And the fact that, you know, your weakest link is someone on your staff or a volunteer perhaps or whatever that has access to what you'd think might not be that interesting to hackers, but church information includes some private stuff, and we track giving and things like that. And so just a weak link there could release some things that we really shouldn't be releasing to the world and don't want to be responsible for releasing to the world. So
kind
of a confluence of direction to talk on this topic.
Yeah, and their list is a good one. Actually, I'd like to start at the bottom of their list with number 7. And that really kind of talks about creating a culture of cyber vigilance. And that's hard to do. Creating culture of any kind is hard to do, and it takes persistence, and it takes kind of the right attitude and the right people. But to continue to think about how to be careful and how your folks need to be careful, and overemphasizing that at every opportunity, saying this is important. You know, you can't think just because you're a church and you're either a church or a small organization or a nonprofit that there aren't people out there who would love to get information like a church directory or like your donor data or like the things that maybe you store for recurring gifts or any of the above. There are lots of things that we possess, that we manage, that need to be protected. So kind of creating that cautious, not paranoia, not to that degree, but just a, there's people out there we have to watch out for. So I think that's where I would start, that culture, just kind of create just a regular cadence, bang the drum enough so that people know, yeah, this is important.
So, Martin, I've got to do a little bit of clarification for you. We have all those links and things that I mentioned at the beginning, including the link to the Concordia Technology Solutions. But we also used our friend AI to generate the list of seven topics that you're seeing there all in the notes. So that didn't really come from the Concordia article specifically.
I think
but
it was
from,
in there.
But
this is the list we're working from. So.
But I think that cybervigilance is one that know before the training that we have at Synod has really driven home to me, because every week we get messages. This is the scam of the week. This is the things they're doing, and just kind of opening your eyes to all the different ways that you can get tricked. And it's in those moments when your defenses are kind of down. It just looks normal. You're busy. You want to just kind of pass along, you know, whatever it is to do in that email that comes into you in the moment.
Yeah.
And it's easy to be tricked into clicking the link. And I think don't click any links and then you won't have any problems. That's a big lesson, you know, but that being aware, that always having your guard up against these kind of attacks is a big deal.
You want to pick one?
Yeah, I think a lot of them have to do with protecting the data. So you can protect the data with strong passwords. You can be aware of what data you have available to you. Certainly, we've mentioned financial data and even personal information like birth dates and things like that that you have maybe in your church database. But also your school data is very prime for hackers. And so, you know, being sure your faculty, just like Michael Vlieger wanted to train the faculty at our school, train them on privacy practices and using secure communication and all of those different things. So it all kind of falls into protecting the data and being vigilant about that and being aware. So when you're tasked with changing passwords every whatever it is, 60 days or 90 days or 30 days or whatever you policy you put in place, understanding why that data is the heart of it, that the bad guys are trying to get to. So doing that vigilance in that particular way, awareness of your database.
One thing that's not on the list, but it's kind of embedded in a couple of these, is one of the biggest issues sometimes is that password, even if it's a strong password, is sometimes shared. It belongs to or it's in the possession of more people than you know. And that goes back to that culture that's a bad idea, period. So it needs to be clear to everybody that, hey, do not share your Church 360 password or your QuickBooks password. If you need an additional account, create one. And then you have at least an audit trail. You know who has logged in and you can track down issues. Sometimes those issues are even internal if you've got some segmentation of those passwords. So that's just a good tip. Keep in mind, and I kind of referenced it early in this discussion, is that you do have data that is important to protect. You have student data, you have family data, you have financial data. You have maybe data that is related to counseling, some details that should not be made public that have been recorded and documented as they should be. So keep in mind that there is some stuff to protect. And, you know, we talked about identity theft. And, you know, that's another thing that could be a natural result. And one of the harmful things, and we've learned this at the Synod level, of losing that data or having a breach, it's not necessarily the data itself. It's just kind of the loss of trust and the credibility of the organization. So don't let that be a talking point or something that kind of creeps into your organizational mindset that, hey, we don't know what we're doing. We need to protect this data, whether you are a school or a church or another religious organization. There really is no excuse for not staying on top of this, because the resources, as we're talking about, are right there.
And, you know, even though I jumped right into people are your weakest link, you mm-hmm. also need to be diligent about performing security assessments on your network and mm-hmm. making sure you have virus protection software in place and things like that, that you can do kind of mechanically to ward off these kind of attacks as well. So yeah. just, yeah, that's mentioned in a lot of places that they aren't that hard to do, keeping up with software updates, those kind of things, but you need to make sure they're being done.
Yeah. And one way to get that done is to make sure you have the right policies and procedures in place and that those aren't just dead documents, that those are actively shared, especially as you're getting new people coming in and out. I mean, there's new volunteers coming in and out of our organizations all the time, sometimes in positions where they have access to sensitive data. So don't just turn the keys over without providing the appropriate cautions.
So yeah, let it be a challenge to you to maybe check a few of these things mm-hmm. off your list this summer to put in place stronger password effectiveness and changing password policies and maybe multi-factor authentication if you aren't doing that currently. You know, put in place a checkbox on your staff meetings each week or each month that you talk about cybersecurity, that you raise that awareness. And also, I mean, one of the ideas that was thrown out here is maybe a cyber tip of the week, even in your church bulletin or news mm-hmm. and notes, you know, just helping to raise awareness with a little blurb or whatever about being vigilant. So certainly worth some time. And being proactive is a lot better than having to react to some situation yep. that could happen.
So we will publish all this stuff, you know, our little list here, our summary list, the Google group discussion references, even the sermon introduction that Pastor Nelson had on identity theft. Pretty cool. In the show notes, and take a look at those. That's, you know, maybe just a good place to direct your folks as well, so they can consume those resources too. All right. I enjoyed the series, Sally. I thought it was a lot of fun just kind of cherry picking little tips and tricks that we saw along the way. I thought it turned out great. So now we're going to get back to business, you know, for the next episode. I don't know what that business is, but we're going to talk about that.
I was wondering if you were going to clue me in on that.
No, I'm not.
Heard yet. So, yeah.
All right. The business at hand is our picks of the week. What did you bring to the table this week?
Well, it's my latest form of entertainment. I'm not sure it has any or much to do with tech and ministry. I shouldn't say not anything. But it's actually a YouTube channel that I came across recently, kind of after the fact, but I will share it anyway because I've been really enjoying this particular channel. It's a channel that's run by a young man named Ryan Trahan. And the reason that I heard about Ryan was because probably about 2 weeks ago or so, he was heading toward Wisconsin. And apparently he was going to visit a Quick Trip. So Quick Trip put out some social media about Ryan coming to Wisconsin and looking for a Quick Trip to visit. And I thought, what is this about? So I went and looked it up. And this young man, Ryan Trahan, who has an established YouTube channel with 21.4 million subscribers. So he's been at this for a while, has 464 videos out there. He is known for doing these kind of challenges and often associating them with some type of charitable organization to raise money. And recently, he and his wife, Haley, went on a 50-state tour, and they literally drove everywhere but Alaska and Hawaii. They flew to those two, but they drove to 50 states in 50 days, which is just an amazing marathon that they completed. I'm so impressed. And like I said, I heard about them when they were heading toward Wisconsin. And in Wisconsin, they actually stayed in an airplane Airbnb. So that was very unique. But they did this, and they did a video blog, a vlog of each day of their travels. And one of the things they did was they stayed in an Airbnb in each state, and they looked for the most unique and coolest Airbnbs and kind of ranked them along the way. So there was a lot of things to follow in the process, you know, all their adventures and seeing the states and the things they pointed out in each state and stuff. But then also the Airbnbs themselves and how amazingly cool they were. And it was everything from container homes to tiny homes to castles, literally castles that were Airbnbs, and everything in between, including unique ones. Like there was a tree house in Oklahoma that was just the most phenomenal place, really cool. They stayed in a place in Utah, which was like superb flat, and where they had filmed a lot of Star Wars. And so it had like Star Wars costumes and things like that. And they could drive around in these Land Cruiser looking cars on the flats. And it was just a really crazy trip. They are Christian, and they are outspoken about their Christianity, and the comments and things that came in, and the donors that came in often encouraged them with God's word. And so that was a really positive thing. So this is extremely family friendly, the whole entire series, and just the adventures and the fun that they get into is really neat to follow. I'm actually went back to the beginning and I'm watching all the way through, and I think I'm up to about day 25, where they're kind of up in the Northeast and going state to state up there. Some of the states didn't even fit on their map. They were so tiny, but they had different challenges along the way, and just a whole lot of fun, and really worth the investment of watching the series. Many of the people who donated, which all the donations in this went to St. Jude's Hospital in Memphis. They originally started out with a goal of $1 million, and they ended up getting $11.5 million as gifts to St. Jude's Hospital. But many of the donors, like I said, encouraged them with God's word and different ways and stuff. So just a fun series, and something I think you would find very family friendly, that you could watch with your kids and enjoy their antics. They're very, I don't know if you'd, what do you even call the generation now? They're young millennials, or I don't know, beyond that. And just have a lot of fun with what they're doing. And so neat to see that in the next generations that are following us, and their creativity, their video editing. It's just really impressive. So
nice. Yeah,
check out Ryan Trahan's channel and the 50 States in 50 Days tour.
I'm going to do that. I love a good YouTube series. All right. My pick. Very timely pick. I teased it a little bit at the beginning. We've had a lot of rain, and actually my pick has nothing to do with the rainstorms that we've had, because if you're around Milwaukee, you know that, boy, we had almost, yeah, some places had a foot of rain in one day. So clearly there were a lot of flooded basements, streets, and businesses, and so on and so forth. Our domicile was fine. We bone dry. But the following weekend, we had a electrical issue that turned off one of our pumps. And so we came home after a camping weekend to about 3 inches of water in our basement. So that was kind of a bummer.
Yeah.
And it was clean water. It was just mostly regen water from our softener system. So it was pumping, you know, probably about 12 hours worth of water into the basement. So came home to have to clean that up. And it's not a finished basement, so there are a lot of people a lot worse off than we were. But it was kind of a bummer. So we've been working at that. And one thing that I said, I'm going to, if we have this happen again, we've taken some steps maybe not to have that, but I want to be aware of it. So I've got a home automation system. So I thought, well, what could I add to it that would tell me when there is water in the basement, so I could be a little bit more proactive and get the water turned off or call attention to it or call my daughter to come over and do something. So there are lots of different ways you can do this, but one of the cheaper ways I found is to use a water sensor, a water leak sensor. And these you can get for $20-$25. One company that I've used a lot for some of my home automation stuff, you know, motion detection and contact sensors for doors opening, that kind of stuff, is Third Reality. They're a cheaper company. They make lower end products, but that actually work. And the one that I'm recommending for my pick this week is Third Reality's water leak sensor. It's kind of cute. It's in the shape of a raindrop. It's probably about, oh, it's about 2 inches tall, about an inch wide, that takes two AAA batteries. It connects up via, I think they have them in a couple of different varieties, but the one I usually try and find is one that uses the Zigbee protocol. It will hook up to your Alexa. It will hook up to the device that I use, which is Hubitat. And it basically will send you, well, it'll sound an alarm if you're actually in the house. But it'll also send a text message or notification to your phone that, hey, I'm sensing water here. And I thought, yeah, is this, how reliable is this? And it is really reliable. I mean, it's, I haven't had to leverage it, but I've tested it and it works super well. So that is a quick and easy solution. You can put it, you know, by your water heater, you can put it by your washer dryer. I've got it by the sump pump. I've got two of them in the basement, one by both pumps. I've got a sump and an ejector pump. And the one of the pumps was the one where the water comes out of or into. And so I just put it right there. And my system will tell me when it needs to. I've got it set up so that it kind of checks the battery every once in a while. So I'll know when the battery will run out on these things, because they are totally, you know, off the grid basically. And I think the batteries, they say in these units, will last about a year. So you just set a little reminder, change the batteries out, and you've got a little peace of mind. So Third Reality water leak sensor is my pick. Again, all their stuff is, I think, pretty good too, if you're looking for some home automation stuff.
That's pretty cool, Martin. It's a whole nother realm of technology, but it reminds me that our insurance agent, our home insurance agent, actually reached out with something that Kevin installed, and I'll have to ask him what it is. It's a little different concept. Yours is actually detecting physical water on the floor, mm-hmm. kind of thing. This was something that he put into the system somewhere along the line that would show you, like, if the toilet's continuously running,
right,
or something like that, that would tell you there's just more water flow than normal.
Than normal, right.
Mm-hmm. And it actually has detected for us. It's the concept that he would get some messaging or whatever because of it. And we have detected, you know, a dripping faucet here or there. And so it has been a benefit and something that we never knew about, but our insurance agent recommended it. So. Cool
yeah,
stuff.
I know a while back, a lot of you out there use Church Mutual for your churches. And I think they had a program, I don't know if it's still running, but you could get a sensor that you could put someplace. And it would, I don't know if it rang a phone number, made a text message, did something. We've got a unit here in the Senate office that was through Church Mutual. So.
Interesting.
Yeah. I mean, it's something you never think about until after the fact, like we did. So,
right.
And it's a cheap thing to give you a little bit of peace of mind. And they make things that go right in the line where if it senses water dripping or leaking, it actually can turn the water off for you even.
Oh,
and normally
wow.
You got to have maybe a plumber install that. But depends on what level of risk you want to accept, especially if you've got like a finished basement. Boy, that is a disaster if you get water in there. So like so many people had.
Yeah. God bless them, because that's hard to deal with for sure.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. All right. Let's move on, Sally, to our community feedback segment.
And this is actually in the category of fun slash sarcastic. Mm-hmm. It comes from our friends at Wells Intersections, which is a Facebook group. Lots of activity over there at Wells Intersections. And someone posted, share your anti-tips. Share the worst advice a communications expert can receive. And I just thought these were really meaningful anti-tips. Obviously, whatever it's saying is the opposite of what you want to do, but I thought they were pretty funny. Like, assume your audience knows what you're talking about, or don't create a plan for following up with attendees of a community event before the event. So go into it with no plan whatsoever. Or proofreading is important. Proofreading important post isn't necessary, the opposite of the truth. And don't add call to action. Your audience will figure it out. So that's just a few of them. Don't plan for a PR disaster. My way is the best way. Nobody checks your website. Don't worry about it. Lots of fun concepts thrown out there and things that, yeah, are kind of convicting potentially if you're doing them. So good stuff.
Yep.
And then finally, just as a follow-up, we did a show recently where we talked about social media graphics and photos. So we talked some about graphics in some of these summer series. And I heard from my best graphics expert, that's Carissa Nelson, our pastor's wife, who's a graphic
designer.
It's a designer.
Nelson show today.
It is. It is. And she just really agreed with some of the things we were talking about. She said, I listened to your episode where you mentioned going to the Minnesota Institute of Art and observing art and applying it to composition and social media. I think this is a great suggestion that should be repeated often. Now that people can have access to AI and Canva, where you can generate things, it doesn't necessarily mean it's good things that you're generating images with AI or whatever. The ability to generate stuff isn't the same thing as knowing what is good or well done. I think people should continue to learn about what makes for good art, design, and music, along with using AI tools to generate stuff. We have the ability to create a whole list of, and she put in quotes, junk for Jesus now. Hopefully that's not what we do with these tools. So I think that's the hope of all of us, but particularly those who are gifted and trained in those areas could very easily have their skin crawling if the AI generated stuff is just not up to par. So keep that in mind, observe and follow good standards, high standards for what you create.
Yeah. Thanks, Carissa, for your contribution. Sally, tell the good people where they can make their own contributions to our show if they chose.
They certainly can visit our website. That website address is wellstech.wells.net. It's been there about 20 years and hasn't changed a bit, that URL. So check out wellstech.wells.net and you'll find all of our past episodes. We'll have 757 out there before you know it. And all of those are there along with social media links along the top right bar, where you can find us on Facebook or Twitter or Pinterest or Instagram and add comments there. You can definitely add comments right here on the show notes site to any episode that you're interested in. And then you can also send us a good old-fashioned email. The email address is wellstech@wells.net. And Martin and I both monitor that email box. So yeah, definitely share your ideas, thoughts, feedback on the topics we've discussed today, or ideas for new shows.
Very good. Sally, thanks for your work and good show. I'm looking forward to beginning a new season, whatever season number this is, where we just keep plugging along. So God is good. So hope you will all tune in for 756 when
758.
We join. Oh, I'm sorry. 758. Yes. hopefully you joined us for 756. That was a good one too. 758 is coming up. So, all right. Thanks everybody for joining us. We'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye.